You're listening to Weird and Dead, the paleontology podcast that tells evolution's most embarrassing and bizarre stories. I'm Amy Atwater.
And I'm Megan Wetherell, and we're two living scientists who are weirdly excited about dead things.
Today, we're talking about weird anatomical features that seem to no longer have an adaptive purpose, but also the evolutionary reasons that these things may have stuck around.
From whale hips to T-Rex fingertips, this episode is all about vestigial structures.
Also, it's about dicks, like so many dicks.
Like always, our podcast talks about some disgusting stuff, so please read through the content warnings. In this particular episode, we do briefly discuss non-consensual sexual behavior between whales, so please keep that in mind before you continue.
Today, we are diving in, no pun intended, literally, as I will talk about whales and dolphins a lot, but we're going to dive into this concept of vestigial structures. I'll define those in a second, but why whales, right? So whale hip bones, so the pelvic region, and even the legs of whales are...
Whales somewhat famous for not having legs, Amy, so maybe...
Go talk to your best friend, Bacillosaurus. There were transitionary forms, Megan.
I was just wondering if orcas had like a secret pair that we didn't know about.
Well, they got a lot of secrets. But I did learn that there's some like anecdotal evidence that some people think that whales have been born with like femora, like a femur bone, just like randomly, kind of like humans born with tails, which again, I can explain. But okay, anyway, I digress. So whales today have these teeny tiny sad little hip bones. They're all that's left. They don't attach to anything else. They're not attached to the vertebral column, like no attachment to the skeletal system. And they've long been thought as an example of a vestigial structure in that it is something that was useful for this organism a long time ago. And now millions of years later is just kind of a quote unquote leftover. Turns out though, research in the last decade or so is showing that there is indeed a function for these itty bitty whale hip bones. And that function is doing it. Doing it all the time. Copulation. Turns out that these actually are attached to the muscles in the genitals of both male and female whales. And a lot of work has gone into, albeit more on the males, on how big the dick correlates to how big the pelvic bones still are. That's... Literally.
Dick size correlates to hip size. Okay, got it.
Yeah, and testes. Testes are an important part. Sometimes you can have big testes and a not as big dick. Anyway, which all goes into, I have read some horrifying things about how heavy a dick and balls of an in-heat whale can be, which is upwards of a fucking ton.
That just sounds so difficult to weigh. Like, just generally.
We're going to get into a lot of my questions in this today, which is, how the fuck do you infer this? Like, how did you get to these numbers? Especially because it turns out the whale testes are seasonally engorged, if you will. They're not full chooch all the time. They only are, like, fully chooching when they're actually during mating season. So it has been hard for scientists to understand the girth, the weight, the impact of these genitals, because a lot of times stranded whales are not horny whales, and so they're not necessarily
I mean,
gathering.
I feel like there's got to be like a grower versus shower when you wash up on the shore sort of issue too, right? Like,
oh, you already have said some words that I'm going to discuss. I'm so excited. Growers versus showers. Whales are like a lot of other artiodactyls that evolved. Yep. So whales evolved from even-toed ungulates that we here are very fond of, the artiodactyls. These are things like cows, deer, sheep, pigs, hippos. It turns out that hippos are actually the closest living relatives of modern whales and dolphins, but they're still so distant that it's not really like a clear bloop, bloop. bloop, bloop, lineage of the hose. Because that's a scientific term that I just used right there.
Yeah. And you've got and a master's. Turns out, anything's a scientific term if you have a graduate degree of any kind.
Bloopology. yeah. And so whales are technically artiodactyls, evolutionarily speaking. And artiodactyls have dicks that are very different from like human dicks. So they have fibroelastic penises, which I don't know. Like, I was like, Megan probably will know all about this.
Why? Why would I know that?
You work on a farm. All of your sheep are about to explode with babies.
Yeah, babies, not dicks.
They had to have a dick in there somewhere to get those babies.
All I know is enough to cut off their balls. That's pretty much the full extent of it.
So you're telling me that if I show you a picture of a ram penis, you won't have seen it already?
That is correct. I will say that all of my sheep have tried to, because they're all the ewes are bottle babies, so they don't have boundaries. So they've definitely tried to get me involved in all of that. And I don't. I don't engage. I walk away. So sure. I don't know.
That's what she says on the record. No, well, rams are fucking weird. I mean, all of this today is going to be really weird, which is I tried to outline it and then I ended up writing 8 pages. So I failed okay, horribly. Okay. But if we rewind a little bit, let's talk about vestigial structures. These are features that are thought of as, again, kind of like evolutionary leftovers or holdovers, that they had some sort of function in an earlier species or earlier time and maybe don't have a direct function today, or maybe their function today is different than what that previous function is. Mm-hmm. So classically in humans, we talk about the appendix, which you can get your appendix removed and you'll still be totes okay. It hasn't shown a ton. You've had your appendix removed.
Yeah,
right?
I will say that when I had my appendix removed, it was very much like, nah, they don't really do anything. They're vestigial. And then immediately after it was taken out, it was like, well, you know how like you get sick for really long periods of time when you get sick? Yeah, you don't have the backup bacteria. So good luck. It just feels like everything that we ever think is vestigial is only vestigial until someone realizes it's attached to a whale dick. You know, like there's always an unexpected use.
So another example is like wisdom teeth in humans. So we have, as a species, gotten much softer and delicater in our face. We're not as like, we don't have this heavy set jaw. We're not as good at like ripping through meat and I don't know, all that weird shit. And so a lot of times there's not even enough space in your jaw for your third molars to come in. And so a lot of times those are considered to be vestigial. But I mean, like, as someone who's sad that she didn't get her wisdom teeth when I was 17, I mean, obviously, if they come in right and aren't fucking up the spacing of everything, like, you would still use them to chew. So, but they're technically, you don't need them. Like, you would be just fine. And most people are just fine without their wisdom teeth. Nipples in men is another one where some folks say that this is a vestigial structure. I remember asking my chemistry teacher, I don't know why I was in chemistry class, asking him why men had nipples. And technically, you know, both male and female, like, some would say that the nipples themselves are not actually sexual structures. Mm-hmm. They have just been co-opted for sexual structures, that they're more of like remnants of essentially fetal development and not necessarily like leftovers in that traditional sense. But evolutionarily speaking, we debate a lot about what things in the fossil record, paleontologically, are vestigial, what are these trade-offs, and how do you identify it? And I think today we're going to dive into some examples of maybe vestigial structures or things we thought were and maybe are not. So tell me a little bit more about what you're bringing to the table today.
So I'd love to say that I am going to give you some examples that keep sex like out of the conversation, but as you're about to see, it just feels like maybe it's just we're all perverts, but so many different vestigial structures somehow come down to wiggle for her pleasure. So we're going to be talking about T-Rex and other dinosaurs and their famous vestigial structures.
Megan, guys, can we just pause for a second and just
Yeah, how did I get the goddamn shaft on this? I had to go read dinosaur papers.
Usually I'm like, I'll take this one for the team. You know, dinos pay my bills. I'll do the dino shit. This week, you signed up for it. I'm so excited.
Yeah, well, it's because you knew about whale pelvises and I didn't have that. So, yeah. I couldn't just talk about snakes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about arms in things like Tyrannosaurus Rex. T-Rex, famously, little tiny arms. In theory, only two fingers. Not actually true, as it turns out. So T-Rex.
What?
Yeah, T-Rex lost a bunch of fingers. I remember in...
It like, was he like a logging incident? Was this, you know?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Actually, we will talk about some potential accidents later on that could happen to those fingers. But it is the thumb and the first finger and then like the knuckle of your middle finger. That's the ones that T-Rex has. And the knuckle of the middle finger has only been found really on one specimen. But because it's found in so many other T-Rex-like animals, the names of who I don't remember because I have, you know, valuable things.
Displetosaurus, Gorgosaurus, yeah. Albertosaurus, yeah. Like all those big chonky boys.
Yeah, the big chonky boys often have that extra weird third metacarpal. But it doesn't have anything beyond that first joint, and it seems to have just kind of like a rounded off end, which is unfortunate because initially,
like
a little bit, yeah. So it's not like there's a joint, essentially, because initially when I saw that, you should know T-Rex and Displetosaurus, all of these other animals, they have the big thumb, the big forefinger, and then a really skinny knuckle. Like it's not like a regular size. It's much smaller and thinner. And there was part of me that was like, oh my God, what if they had an eye finger?
This is like your theory of sauropods having trunks, you know? This is in that same
that one
vein.
Is significantly better supported than this one. Yeah, so there's no like evidence that they were missing anything beyond the knuckle. So that also makes me wonder if maybe it was just there to make like a palm. Does that make sense? Like instead of having two separate fingers and then a third separate finger, I wonder if it's like you've got your thumb and then a fatter extended palm up into your up to your knuckle.
But okay.
Yeah. I couldn't find anybody talking about that. Nobody's talking about dinosaur palms. So T-Rex has the most famous tiny arms. It is not the tiniest of tiny arms or the least armed. And in fact, there's a lot of different dinosaurs that have also lost arms and fingers. My favorite one is not necessarily, I think it's technically the shortest arm compared to its body size, but it's Carnotaurus. Have you seen a Carnotaurus arm?
I don't think so.
Why don't you scroll down? No. Scroll down to the very first image on that thing that I sent you earlier.
Oh.
Yeah, so go ahead and describe what you see there, Amy.
Well, you mean the whole thing? I mean, it's like this sad skeleton of this wistful-looking theropod looking up into the distance.
Which is full-on Naruto running, by the way, with its arms all the way back.
Right, yeah, good point. And then, you wouldn't even know they were arms without the two giant arrows pointing at them. Because otherwise they would blend in with the ribs so well.
Yep.
And then the lower image is just a zoomed in version on that arm. And it just looks like, I don't know, like really kind of chonky, but also short.
It's
chody.
Like a chody little flipper. It does still technically have four separated fingers, but they don't have very many joints left, apparently. I'm not even sure where all of the carpals are, since those fingers seem to be welded directly to a short radius and ulna. So that's your forearm bones for everybody else listening.
It seems to be skipping over all the annoying wrist bones I can't memorize and going straight from digits to forearm and just skipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, which I respect. I could never memorize those ones in anatomy class, so.
They don't feel that
made
necessary.
Made it way easier.
You know? Yeah, so Carnotaurus has, I think, shortest arm technically. I would also argue possibly the stupidest looking arm. We're going to see some other stupid looking arms, but this one, extra stupid looking. It was recently in a documentary where a National Geographic documentary, I think, some big dinosaur documentary. And I haven't seen the documentary, but I have seen the clips of Carnotaurus with like blue wrists wiggling its tiny little meat flaps in order to presumably attract a mate. I think they were just making fun of it.
I think we're going to like talk about it a lot, but like really, like that's all we got. That's all we got is just like, oh, come hither, bitch.
No, Amy, that's not all we got, but we will get there.
But it's like the only, it's the only.
My favorite go-to is that all paleontologists
sexy
seem to think short arms are super hot. Like if you want to date a paleontologist, you'd better have tiny fucking arms because they are into it.
They're going to be like,
Yeah, so Carnotaurus has a wiggly little flipper thing. And there are technically four. Yeah,
it does. It looks like what you'd see in a pinniped. That's what it reminds me of.
It does.
Is like a seal arm. Yeah. Like that. But without their, you know, then they've got like their flippery things. But how chonky it is totally gives pinniped realness.
And they weren't really able to do too much with it, I don't think. I think they were only able to like flap it up and down. Like they didn't have, like when you drop all of those little tiny wrist bones, you really lose a lot of like nuance in your movement. Carnotaurus, ridiculous, but technically, four separate lineages have evolved super short arms, and Carnotaurus is really funny, but Mononychus is super... I should have really looked up the pronunciation of that before we started, but fuck it. I have now a PhD. Now you know PhD. How I feel. If I say it's Mononychus, backs me up. All right, so Mononychus, it has like this wiggly little flipper. So you can go ahead and, well, they're all flippers. Go ahead and scroll down to the next one. There should be two images there. So initially we only found one finger. So it's an extremely short arm. It looks even shorter because it's super stubby. It's very, very thick. And it's got a huge elbow. So if you ever bump your elbow and you hit your funny bone, you're hitting your olecranon process. And guy...
It's got a big one.
Yeah, it could basically do nothing else.
Isn't that like a digging thing? Isn't it?
Yeah, so Mononychus...
But with what?
Exactly. And did you notice that centimeter scale bar?
chicken wing. That's so sad.
Is, I think, genuinely about the same size as a chicken wing.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it means it would have tasted the same too. I mean, just saying.
God, like, such thick bones. You would have even less flesh. Except, I guess, behind the olecranon attaching up to the top of the humerus. So this guy's got like super ass pointy elbows. Super pointy elbows usually indicate that that's like a very strong lever arm that you need big muscles attaching to it. And it ends in one giant claw. They have technically found since then, and the claw is the thumb. So they got one giant thumb with a giant ass claw on it. And they have technically found since then that it did have a forefinger and a middle finger. But again, they were II-esque, very small, very skinny, not long, unfortunately. Interesting. So still no contendant, but.
So it seems like maybe those like gracile tender ones were not. Maybe vestigial, but I mean, this bitch looks rugged. She looks ready to like claw, dig.
Purposeful. Like you don't get that sort of stubby arm with a giant fucking claw if you're not using it. Like there's a lot of arguments with T-Rex and Carnotaurus and other dinosaurs that it's like, it is vestigial. You are losing usage of it. Maybe you're retaining usage for some things, but you don't really need it a lot. But Mononychus looks like it's invested some serious like renovation energy into its forearm. So Mononychus has the wiggly flipper. It's got a claw at the end. We'll talk about the digging hypothesis in a little bit. But kind of all of these short arms, with the exception of Mononychus, have the same general ideas that get bandied around a lot as far as how they could have been used. Because we really, really want them to have a use. I think it's just shameful that T-Rex could have had tiny arms for no good reason.
The adaptationist program.
So there's some bodies of evidence that maybe this is what is known as a spandrel. All right, do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, referencing one of my favorites that I know you hate.
Yeah, go ahead then. I did have to re-look that up because I was like, oh yeah, spandrel. Oh God, what is that from? Yeah.
Oh, I keep it close to my heart. Yeah, you're referencing the Spandrels of St. Mark's, which is a paper written by Stephen Jay Gould. Pretty impressive and paleontologist who died much too soon, I think from stone lung or cancer. It was like kind of related. It was very sad and tragic. One of the things he felt passionately about was that not every structure necessarily has a direct function, right? Yeah. And also that things can be evolved for one reason and then it can go to an exaptation and be utilized for a different function, like feathers came about for warmth probably, and then were, you know, utilized for signaling and flying eventually too. So anyway, he wrote the paper, The Spandrels of St. Mark's, where he talks about, I guess, some fucking building somewhere in Europe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get that part. And how you look at the building itself and within the big domes and whatnot, they've between the beams holding up the actual building, they've put in these beautiful paintings and gorgeous artwork mm-hmm. to the point where you might think that the building was built to display that artwork when really it's structural and it has nothing to do with the function of the artwork. It's just a byproduct of people being like, oh, hey, that's some cool open space. Let's paint some shit on it. And it actually was not built for that. It was built for the structural integrity of the building itself.
Yeah.
And he's pointing out in this paper that some things are just fucking like holdovers or not functional necessarily. And we don't have to spend all this time trying to make everything related to an exact specific function, which is a breath of fresh air and something to keep in mind.
So even though we will talk about all of the potential reasons that T-Rex and other dinosaurs could have kept their arms, they also could have just kept their arms because... There's also the difference between why did T-Rex lose their arms versus why did they keep the little shitty ones that they currently have, right?
Right.
Like, why didn't they commit all the way? Because, of course, we do see a correlation in these dinosaurs between, well, not in all of them, but in a lot of them, the bigger their fucking head is, the smaller their fucking arms are because they're not really using their arms to hunt their prey anymore.
Like a crocodile. Yeah. Like they don't really, they do all of
you don't get bitch slapped by a crocodile. Eating. You get bitten.
No.
Yeah.
You get bit in the face. Granted, they still have limbs.
They do still have limbs. And so does a T-Rex. to its eternal shame, it does still have it.
Yeah.
So spandrels are like if you're building an arch and you have to put an arch inside of a square doorway, the little triangles in between the arch and the doorway, they look really pretty and you can decorate them all you want, but they are technically only there because the arch happened. So in the T-Rex case, the arms are small, not because it was purposeful to have them be small, but because they weren't needed when you had a giant fucking head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that said,
beautiful.
They did keep some arms. They did not lose the arms all the way. And that does mean that even though those arms are pretty tiny, they are investing some amount of biological energy into having those arms around, which is part of why there are so many different theories. The first thing you should know about T-Rex arms in particular is that someone has done a study and found out they could bench press 400 pounds.
Wait, the person who did the study or T-Rex? Oh,
definitely T-Rex. I've met the person who did the study. I don't think he could bench press that much. They have also found that it had about 90 degrees of motion, mostly forwards and backwards. So it could move.
Okay. And in an aerodynamically way with the body, you know, not across and shit. Okay.
And of course, even though it was technically had like the muscular strength to bench press 400 pounds, that would be pushing down, which doesn't make sense. So we do know it had some strength still left in its arms, which is different from Carnotaurus. Carnotaurus is meat flaps. Yeah, sure, whatever. but the arms of T-Rex do technically still have some like meat to the bone, right? So let's go through some of the explanations for these. I mean, first off, obviously, we've already talked about it, sex appeal, just being really hot, I guess. Who doesn't love a tiny armed
little
guy?
Arms. So step aside, short kings.
So there's
we
that.
Got T-Rex kings. I guess that's like a double.
One paleontologist kind of suggested that since they can bench press 400 pounds, maybe it was to help them get back up off the ground after a nap. So like a kickstand.
And then what? It just used core strength to like the rest of the way up.
I mean,
a T-Rex stands like what? Like almost 20 feet? Okay, maybe. I don't know. I fuck that. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, like we T-Rex, get up, like
that's only a small portion of how. Yes. And I want to also say that 400 pounds sounds like a lot to us pathetic little humans, but like this giant bitch is like, what is the bite strength of T-Rex? It's something like 4,000 pounds. I don't know.
It's a lot.
Bad at that, but. Right. So it'd be like, yeah, it sounds good, but for the what the rest of that organism was capable of, it just pales in comparison.
Yeah. You've basically just stated all the reasons why everybody else is like, that's dumb. Because it just seems a little weird. Probably more counterbalancing to get up after a nap.
Were they like break dancing?
There's a theory that this, I really like this one, that maybe they were for weapons. Maybe they were for stabbing and scratching each other.
Yeah. Just like a little shank when no one was expecting it. Just like boop.
Yeah, because that's how I would another choose boop-ology. To hurt something else when I had a giant fucking head full of teeth is to stab it with my little tiny arms. Absolutely.
Well, that smile, you got to keep that smile intact. So
another one was that maybe they use them for grooming each other. You know, you got to keep them around.
Okay, but again, like they don't seem to be are they capable of that?
I don't know. I mean, they can, I don't know what like tick they're pulling off that it weighs more than 400 pounds. But I
and a lot of animals that groom each other, which this is gross, but they like eat what they're grooming them for. Like it does have some benefit, I guess. And like they can't even reach their own mouth face holes with their pathetic arms. Yeah. So like,
and that is my deal with a lot of these dinosaur theories is that regardless of what they're doing with their arms, their whole body has to be on top of whatever it is. Like they're not able to see their own hands. So they're just feeling around.
Good point. Every day's a pinata when you've got it.
So another one is digging nests, which
Okay, I feel like we've already talked about why that's fucking stupid.
They do have feet, by the way. So, and big fucking tails as well. I do love the idea that they're just a foot off the ground scratching a nest. That is very funny to me.
What? And okay, so you know like when we go caving, we've gone through caves where you have to turn your head sideways to get through the crack. Like, do they have to turn their heads sideways to the ground so that they can actually make contact
ground
and their limbs?
I want to see someone do the biomechanical study where they describe what contortionist position is required for T-Rex to see its own hands.
T-Rex, it was just really into acro yoga.
Like, is it doing a full dab whenever it's trying to like groom somebody?
This is great. All right, I'm highly entertained. Yeah. Please keep telling me about
we're not done.
Ideas. I figured because it's T-Rex.
Yes. Okay. So sex appeal, we've kind of talked about hugs. Which is not like friendship hugs, but like you're on top of a lady.
Grasping
hugs.
Yes.
Still more than 400 pounds, but I guess that could potentially help you hold on. Sure. One of the papers goes into a lot of detail about how T-Rex arms were small to not for any of the reasons that we've just described. Oh, the other thing with hug could be restraining prey. But again, if you are only able to hold 400 pounds in your little arms and you've got a big mouth, I don't know that that's going to be super helpful. But instead of focusing on like something that they could do with these arms, they focused on basically the idea that these arms had to be small because it turns out T-Rex was social. Like they've now found like footprints of them all together.
Unlike all of the paleontologists who study T-Rex.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I love you all. Actually, that's not true.
We love some of you.
Some of you I tolerate.
Yeah. Yeah. So T-Rex was social. They were probably eating together at certain points. And so this paper presents an argument about the idea that they had to have small arms because otherwise they'd get bitten off. Which again, isn't an adaption. It's not an adaptation. It's not a use for the arms. It's just another reason to not have arms.
to not have them.
Not have arms.
Right. And I'm like, what are you comparing to? Like, hyenas have arms.
Oh, they were comparing them to crocodiles, because crocodiles, when they feed, they often bite each other, which, okay, I think they'll still bite each other whether or not their little arms are in the way.
Right. Again, and crocodiles are not snake-a-diles. No. They have limbs. Yeah.
So the last theory that I have on this list that is hands down my favorite, it is a combination of the sex appeal and hugs hypotheses.
Yes.
But specifically, it is that they use them to tantalize their mates. And I like this one because it's the dumbest of all of them. And it is something we do actually see in modern animals. So we do see this.
Yes, nice.
In boa constrictors. And we will talk about them, I think, in a little bit, because I want to talk a lot about snakes. But yeah, the last idea, which is the one that I'm going for, is that they use them to like gently hum and flap along the edge of their mates.
Oh, okay. So
seducing. Yeah. So they're for seduction.
So they're like tapping them. They're just like, but not like tapping them and tapping them.
Yeah. I mean, tapping them, pre-tapping them, you know?
Pre-tap. Okay. Yeah. Pre-tap, tap, tap. Tap, 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 tap.
Yeah.
Okay. I like anything that you are going to tell me has like a comparative aspect to it. Like, I'm going to be won over a lot more when dinosaur people show me crocs or birds that are doing similar
techniques. Speaking of comparative aspect, I forgot to go back to Mononychus. So Mononychus, not Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Okay. So Mononychus has these things. These chicken wings.
Yeah. And so these chicken wings have been compared to things like armadillos and aardvarks and other animals that dig specifically into ant and termite mounds.
Oh.
And so that's one of the big thoughts here, especially since Mononychus apparently doesn't have teeth. So
I know, but you're showing me this image of the entire organism and what is it doing with its face and everything else that's in the way to get its hands to the nest?
Yes.
Like it would have to have its face in there, its legs in there, its torso on top of it. Like there's no room.
It's kind of like imagining that your hands can never come like above your nipple line and you are trying to watch yourself carve into an anthill. Like it just seems like Mononychus would have had to dangle itself all the way over these anthills in order to like gain access,
right?
Just doing it by touch, which is
possible. Oh, but I do feel you that like something is going on because it does have quite the limb.
My thoughts are that with this, we get into that concept of like evolutionarily using what you've already got in place. There are a lot of dinosaurs prior to Mononychus that had kind of short arms, that had that general body posture. If the direct ancestors of Mononychus were therefore going to be getting better at eating ants, it's not necessarily true that they're going to regrow their whole goddamn arm. Yeah, maybe it's awkward to be full humping a ant nest as you're carving into it, but if you're still able to carve into it, then that does still have an adaptive use. It's just not the perfect model that we kind of expect.
So has anyone looked at the hypoglossal nerve of Mononychus to tell me how big it is for their tongue innervation? Because if this motherfucker had a long-ass tongue in addition to those pathetic little chicken wings, then I'm like, okay, maybe we've got some anteater energy going on in this fantasy.
As far as I know, the other big thing is just that it has no teeth.
Has no teeth.
Yep.
Has no teeth because you're eating ants, maybe. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's looked at the tongue to see if you've got a long tongue.
Right. That's what I would be curious about. Does have a long bill, is what the tongue is.
Right. Its face is pretty long.
Which
and skinny.
That goes with a lot of ant-eating organisms. They definitely elongate their snout. I mean, anteaters are the ones I'm thinking of off the top of my head. Yeah. So in general, because they're ant eaters. Okay, question though. So T-Rex, had the asteroid not hit, do you think that we would have had, I guess they're birds, but like, do you think that there would have been a direct T-Rex relative that had no arms at all? Or you think they were good for the cuddles?
Technically, the asteroid wiped out a whole lot of big things, so you wouldn't have had big things really surviving. But if big things did continue to survive and get bigger, then yeah, I feel like T-Rex probably would have had descendants that had no arms whatsoever. Unless it's really important for their sex lives, in which case,
right,
maybe it's stuck around.
So you were talking a lot about T-Rex little arms and how a lot of it seems to be, whether it's direct mating or appealing to the female. And that seems to be a lot of the thoughts around the whale stuff too. Mm-hmm. So I first came about this topic because I was going to do an Instagram video on a whale skeleton I had recorded in the Smithsonian Natural History Museum. And I went to go like Google, like, yeah, they're vestigial because the little sad little hip bones were hanging right there. And then this paper popped up that was like, no, they're not. They're for dicks. And I was like, tell me more. And first off, I do think we have to talk a little bit or a lot of bit about whale dicks, which is super fun.
Have to. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So
got I went to no this, choice. No choice.
I went to this talk that was about Bacillosaurus, and we could talk about Bacillosaurus here because it had sad little hind limbs. I mentioned that earlier, defending myself. And someone brought up, like, why do they have those? And they were like, well, they were for mating because whales don't have baculum. I work for this place, so I couldn't stand up and go, no, sir, no whales have baculum, sir.
A baculum is a dick bone. It's a dick. It's
yes,
a bone that goes in the dick.
It is a dick bone. We're going to do a whole episode on them. Yeah, and artiodactyls, classically, these even-toed ungulates, you know, like cow, like everything you think of with a hoof except for a horse or a rhino or a tapir if you're weird, is an artiodactyl. And they have fibroelastic penises, which are different from the vascular penises of humans and horses.
Can I just say that so fibroelastic, it just sounds like an REI fabric that would repel water somehow. Like it does, doesn't it sound like
REI,
something that's like
Half Dome 2.
Fibroelastic. Yeah.
Fibroelastic fabric. Yeah, no, you're right. It does. It does. But it's not. It's a penis.
Yeah, of course.
So, okay, I went down quite the rabbit hole. I'm going to try not to go into all of it. But okay, essentially in a vascular penis, which is probably what our viewers have the most experience in, maybe. I just don't want to make too many assumptions. But essentially, it's like, okay, when you said growers versus showers earlier, like I laughed because that's kind of what this is. Like I tend to think of the vascular dicks as the ones that are growers because they're pretty, you know, all the time, unless they get a bunch of blood flow to their corpus cavernosum, which is a series of two parallel tubes, essentially, that fill with blood and get that dick hard. Whereas the other type is a fibroelastic penis, which means that it's actually not blood that causes it to get hard. It actually just stiffens just due to like muscle movement. And so technically, they're kind of always hard. They've got a semi all the time. Like they're just like they're showers, I would say. And so because you can't like go around all the time with your big old schlong half erect out all the time, they have a sigmoid flexure. I mean, you can, but you will get arrested. I got flashed. Remember? I was on the phone with you.
Oh, I remember. God.
Yeah, that was a vascular penis. Fibroelastic, however, is more of what we see. Well, okay, wow, okay. Well, I didn't do my order of my things correctly. But if you want to scroll past the first image I included, which is the picture of a blue whale penis, just for reference, which is the biggest of all the penises. It's very long, but not a lot of girth. Anyway, scroll past that. So I found a slideshow about livestock dicks. I sure did. So here you can see that the fibroelastic penis has this retractor penis muscle that actually is in the dick itself. Like it's not actually connected to the pelvic bones at all. It's just a part of the dick muscles. And it causes this kind of S curve in it, the sigmoid flexure, which allows this penis to be kind of retracted into the body. And then it just like comes out when it's ready to have some fun. The picture on the lower part is of a stallion dick, and that is more like a human dick. And so that is where it does take actual blood to like get it engorged and ready to go. So if you scroll down on that one, this is where I'm showing you a picture.
Oh my God.
Your face.
Okay. So this Penis is an Continued example. Is the name of the slide that I'm looking at. Is that correct?
Yes. I think though the other ones might also be Penis Continued.
No, there's just one Penis Continued. Then it goes into Species Difference and it looks like it has somebody fisting the fucking side. But yeah.
Yeah, that's a stallion. Anyway. Yeah. so on worm? Penis Continued. Yeah. So these are different adaptations, apparently. So like with a ram, which has at the very end, it has like this teeny tiny little strand string kind of coming out of it. That's literally where its spunk comes out, which is crazy. Ooh. And it spray literally read the it says filiform appendage sprays sperm within vagina for better chance of fertilization. Whereas the boar, in case you're interested, the boar has more of a corkscrew end to its penis, which is how it matches the anatomy of the female cervix to increase chances of fertilization and that. So these are some of the funky adaptations that we see in these fibroelastic penises. Whales have very fibroelastic penises that are right. Like you don't see pictures of whales swimming with just dicks out everywhere because that wouldn't be hydrodynamically.
Just like a fucking anchor trailing out behind them at all times.
Like a sieve, gonna catch some extra prey. Right. So they have a genital slit where again, the sigmoid flexure, that S curve, keeps the penis within the whale itself because it's not advantageous or energy efficient to just have their dick out all the time. So it really only comes out for mating or, as we will discuss, other things that people do that with their genitals that maybe aren't mating related, which no judgment.
Other things that whales
did
do.
I say people?
Yeah, you
this
sure
is
did.
Chilling. We have vascular ones though. It's I mean in
Let me know.
So anyway, that is kind of this whole study ended up looking at these hip bones that we thought were for absolutely nothing are actually attachments for some of these fibroelastic penis muscles that allow for better attachment. Now, they went ahead and they looked at the different type of mating system of different species of whales, whether or not it was monogamous or multi-male, multi-female. They didn't use those words, which I will discuss later, and trying to figure out that, hey, it does indeed look like the bigger the testes, the bigger the dick, the bigger these supposed vestigial hip bones are, and that they actually are doing something for mating. It's really interesting, too. I didn't know that out of the like sad little floating hip bones, we don't actually know which hip bone in a like us or, you know, another thing with a pelvis that those come from. So we have an ischium, an ilium, and a pubis, and we don't know which one of those is what's left, which is interesting.
So when
to
you
me.
Say like they have a small remnant like pelvis, you really mean like. I'm looking at this image now where it's just like a floating bone and we don't even know which pelvic bone it was.
Correct. Weird. And so image C there is what that actual pelvic bone looks like, which looks pretty nondescript, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of looks like a clavicle. D in there is actually they used the distalmost rib to be kind of their control to tell if it was like just body size variation that was going on.
Oh, interesting.
And we're finding over and over that it didn't seem to be the case. We're going to discuss some of the things that gave me pause with this paper, but this is the gist of it, is that there does seem to be a difference. So they have this little cute Franciscan dolphin. It has the smallest absolute and residual testes mass, and it is, I think, a monogamous species, whereas some of the quote-unquote, I don't really like using this word, promiscuous species have the largest just absolute testy size or relative to body size testy size. So this is a concept that goes along with a lot of vertebrate animals, which is when you can get an idea of the mating system of a species by looking at their testes relative to body size. If you've got big old balls, you are participating in sperm competition. So it's hypothesized that you're doing it with lots of individuals and you're competing with just your load getting there or being the fastest swimmers and whatnot. Whereas if you're monogamous, or if you are like gorillas, for example, have the smallest testicle to body size ratio in primates, and that's because they are a polygynous group, and that it is one male, the silverback gorilla, who has multiple females, and he's not competing with any other males. So he doesn't have to create that much spunk to get the job done. He can, he knows he has them in, I wanted to say in his control, and I really don't like that. I'm having a hard time with this. Yeah. Anyway, so that's kind of the idea behind this. And they're finding a lot of evidence that dicks get bigger with bigger testes, pelvic bones get bigger with bigger balls. And it really does seem that there's also pelvic bone diversity and morphology to match these unique different mating systems that they have.
Oh, weird.
They also found that female pelvic bones also were showing this variation. This is not a sexually dimorphic trait, which is what you might be wondering. And unfortunately, the authors really didn't give a fuck about females and made that very clear in all of their social, a lot of pop press articles from this. So one of the things about whale dicks that we've touched on before is that they are quote unquote prehensile.
Yeah, I actually do want to pause here and say Amy and I used to write a blog. The number one search term to this day that gets people to our blog is prehensile penises.
You're welcome. Yeah. I don't know if I'm welcome. And I'm going to get more into some of this, which is later, but I did want to point out that one of the things that really frustrated me is that they had to point out, you know, whale dicks are, like we said, they're not entirely prehensile. It's because they're controlled by muscles. Uh-huh. They compared it to like a kite where you have two different strands to control the motion of a kite is like equivalent to a whale, a male whale dick. And, you know, they are like, yeah, this is largely evolved in our opinion because a lot of female whales avoid copulation. They are trying to get away from the males because it is advantageous for them to, you know, there's theories out there, to select the best sperm, right? So if you're capable of getting to me, oh my God, you're the best. I have issues and questions about all of that. So one of the things that female whales will do, and it has been observed, is that they will go belly up and put their vag and belly out of the water to get away from males during breeding season. And male whale dicks have evolved to get there anyway. Some fucking how. So they will get there. And they, like, they really did. And so the whole paper was based on like, wow, male dicks do all this crazy shit to get to females anyhow who might be avoiding them. In other words, you know, trigger warnings involved. Yeah. And yet in all the pop press articles, the fucking lead author or co-authors kept writing about like, oh, we'll never be able to ask a female whale, was it good for you? But it's plausible that these evolved to keep the partners happy and produce more descendants and that it's all about keeping female cetaceans happy. And I'm like, but you didn't look at the female's junk at all. And they're literally going belly up to avoid these dicks. But you're going to tell me in the Smithsonian and Nat Geo that it's, which didn't match the publication. It really ticked me off. But what they did notice in the paper is that the females have these pelvic bones too. It's not sexually dimorphic like you might expect if it's just there selecting the dicks. So they found that there's a similar trend in females. And again, the author said a clitoris and a penis are the same thing. It could be that these females are moving their clitorises around in weird ways that we don't understand to possibly sample males while they're mating. Who knows what they're doing? End quote. That was his legitimate quote. As if like, oh, we spent all this time and energy researching whale dicks and we found the same signal in the females, but who knows what they're doing.
Well, I mean, it does sound like he doesn't know what to do with a clitoris. So that's on track.
I digress. Yeah. So whales, fascinating, interesting. depressing.
Yeah, whales. Intriguing.
So that's my all bit. Right. Yeah, please tell me about boa constrictors. I'm excited. So
snakes in general just have like a whole bunch of vestigial structures.
Because they're fucking weird.
Yeah, because they're just, you know, ropes. And they became extremely committed to being ropes to the extent where they have a lot of asymmetric organs. And the best studied one is not their dicks. It's their lungs. All snakes have two lungs. But one of them is a little baby lung and the other one is a big boy lung that works.
Oh.
And the size variation, it does change a little bit, but no snake has lost baby lung. And baby lung is always a baby. No snakes have two full lungs. All of them have one and a quarter. And they're all righties. They all have one big right lung.
Interesting.
A tiny left lung. So it's a pretty deep, weird, shared characteristic.
I mean, I know they're just ropes, but they're aren't they bilaterally symmetrical ropes? And like, if you told me they were like a flounder, I could understand like one side more than another, but interesting.
They're very much not bilaterally symmetrical. They, it's partly because as they do the sidewinder move, if you have two lungs, you would just push air potentially in from one into the other.
Oh, right, right, right.
So respiration-wise, it might make more sense to just have one. But they do, in some snakes, retain other vestigial features, like tiny, tiny, tiny little vestigial legs, which is what you get. Yeah, so cute in boa constrictors. So in boa constrictors, called spurs, and they are little vestigial legs, and they are used romantically. Ooh. And it is romance. It is not what we're talking about with whales. It is, they squirm along the female and they tickle them with their little spurs. And it's supposed to encourage the female to change position and roll over, essentially.
Easier access.
And someone got to write a whole paper about it because they were the first ones to successfully like actually see it happen and write it down. So that's a paper someone wrote is, I saw my two snakes fucking and here's how they fucked.
Are there, like, do all boa constrictors have these teeny tiny little sads? And are they always visible or do they only come out to play during?
Yeah, they're external protrusions. I was thinking hemipenes because they have forked dicks, but.
Right. Well, that too. Another time.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. So boa constrictors have external spurs. Little tiny legs.
Okay. Just to do the right touch.
Yeah, and it's a remnant of the femur. So it's a little thigh bone. Little thigh bone.
Just a little bit there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you need to woo your partner tonight, try rapidly banging your knees into their sides until they roll over.
That always works for me.
So we know that boa constrictors do this. And so one of the ideas was that maybe T-Rex does this too. That maybe that's why T-Rex retains its stupid little arms, is maybe you need to be able not to bench lift 400 pounds, but to slap a female T-Rex hard enough that she notices you are there.
But then why isn't it sexually dimorphic?
That's a great question. I mean, not all sexual characteristics are sexually dimorphic. It could be how you use it.
I feel like I am becoming quite jaded in that I just doubt and question the bias and perspective of what I feel like is frequently all male teams who write this stuff. And I just constantly go like, okay, so do the females tickle the dudes back? Like, do the dudes like it too?
Instincts, no. But it's also worth pointing out that even though this is, to me, the funniest fucking visual of all T-Rex time, that they have legs and pelvises and more mobility than a boa constrictor does. So, like, a boa constrictor, they pointed out in this paper that, like, smaller male boa constrictors might need to be particularly ticklish in order to encourage. Because if the female doesn't roll over, they can't impregnate her. But yeah, like a T-Rex doesn't need, they don't roll over. I mean, maybe they do. Maybe that's really what the arms are for them, the girls, is so they can get back up. But I don't think so.
Right.
And it's also, it's T-Rex arms, not T-Rex legs. So it's not right next to the pelvis. So yeah, I don't know. It could be, it could not be. I think it's pretty funny. So I like it. It's my personal theory.
my personal hypothesis with T-Rex arms is that they were on their way out, or they were going to, maybe they had feathers. Yes. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure there's a lot of opinions out there.
No, you are
going
to cut that because we are about to talk about why that is.
Oh,
bad.
Good. Well, then set me up. Set me up. Okay. For, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a fucking wing.
There we
There's
go.
There's a person on TikTok who, God bless his scientific spirit, is convinced that all dinosaur, and you know what? Okay. We do talk a lot of shit on dinosaur paleontologists here. So like the idea that that a paleontologist could staple arms on the wrong direction. I mean, I can't really say that I wouldn't be totally surprised. But that said, it's pretty positive we know which direction T-Rex arms go. They have been studied pretty extensively by pretty competent people. So this guy thinks that they went backwards and that they were little tiny chicken wings, which very funny. We actually can tell if there were flight feathers on a wing.
Yes.
Because they embed in the bone. So, nope, T-Rex arms were going forward. And if they had feathers, they were only little fluffy ones. They were not wing feathers.
They weren't flight feathers. Well, I'm going to stand by my shitty hypothesis because I said, like, later on. So, you know, maybe they get there in my fantasy realm. But I'm pretty glad they went extinct for a multitude of reasons. So.
Yeah, for a variety of reasons. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Okay, so they weren't. Yeah, I mean, I was just talking to someone who's like, was T-Rex feathered? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, I don't care. But
I don't think they found any skin impressions that have feathers for T-Rex, but there are quite a lot of cousins of T-Rex that have confirmed feathers. So I suspect they were at least fuzzy to some extent. You know, like an elephant, how the elephants have just like little tiny prickles of hair. Maybe they just had little tiny shitty feathers.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, I mean, I talked about
feathers.
Why'd you
make a face like that was going to be cute? That's like a balding animal. It's not cute.
I was talking to someone to point out that feathers are an exaptation because they evolved for probably something being fluffy and warm, or maybe like coloration and signaling. And then they got adapted for flight. But that's not like birds, or the first feathers were not like, let's jump out and fucking fly. Like, that is not how it went. And I guess, you know, a lot of times when we're dealing with creationists and stuff like that, you can simplify it, but like no, it was a journey of a lot of awkward years of fluffiness and warmth before they were like, oh shit, we can put this to use. And again, no organism is like, I'm aware of my own evolutionary position. No, even us, we are not.
Yeah, grow feathers right now if you think that that's the case.
Do it. Thank you for listening. If you liked the podcast, be sure to rate and review us on your listening platform of choice. We really appreciate it.
If you'd like to hear more and support the show, follow us on Patreon for some exclusive bits or on our various social media platforms. You can follow Amy on Instagram at Mary Annings Revenge.
And Megan on Instagram and TikTok at GeopedalFabric, or both of us at Weird and Dead on Instagram and TikTok. This podcast is part of the Geology Podcasting Network.
Produced by the traveling geologist, Chris Spencer.
Cover art provided by Chris Spencer and the hosts.
Our theme song is Unlock Me by Paraskinel. Editing services provided by the amazing Katie Bradley.
Hosted by and researched by us, Amy Atwater and Megan Weatherall. Thanks for listening. Well, whale. What a day.